Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome along. It's Writer's Routine. Now, taking us through her working day this week is Callie Taylor. She's just published her sixth book. It's called Sleep. She's a Sunday Times bestseller, writing both psychological thrillers, crimes, YA novels as well. She's even won the Most Unreliable Narrator Award. I love that that exists. I'm a huge fan of that. So we'll talk about exactly what it is in a little bit. Also, you can find out why it's okay to be lazy in your first draft, as long as you're a bit more rigorous in your edit. And she's been published as an author for around about 10 years now. So we talk about how her writing routine has changed during that time.
Yeah, it was different. The first four books that I wrote, I had a day job. I was single, I lived in a one-bedroom flat. So I would, you know, come home from work and work in the evenings, and I'd work in the weekends, you know, not go out, not see my friends, because I wanted to write this book. It couldn't be more different now. And then I could, you know, use my night owl tendencies. And on the weekend, I might often start at like 8 o'clock at night and write till 3 or 4 in the morning.
So stick around, that's all on the way in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, hello, hope you're good. My name's Dan Simpson. This is the show where we take a sneak peek inside the working day of a successful author to see how they get ideas, then put them down onto paper, and finally, fingers crossed, get them published as well. Very quickly before we start, thank you to Nick Vista and Mrs. Cass and Sophie Bournemouth and loads of others who have really helped us out and left us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts recently. If you're enjoying what we do, and if you want to say thanks to us for doing it, I know that's a strange way to ask, but that's pretty much what it is. The best way that you can do that is to head over to Apple Podcasts and just write a few nice things. Find Writer's Routine. Drop 5 stars. It's really that easy. It takes barely a minute of your day, and I'd love to see your name there. Now, this week, C.L. Taylor is on, or Callie Taylor. She's on the show. She's one of those authors who is just phenomenally big on Twitter. You can't really move in the writing community for hearing wild, devoted praise from other authors to her. And her readers love her as well. She's constantly critically and commercially acclaimed. She's mostly a psychological thriller writer, although she has dabbled across YA as well. So you can hear how her writing differs between the genres that she writes through. Also, we talk about the busiest year of her life, when she went back to work, looking after a newborn and writing a novel. We'll get some of your writing tips as well, so stick around for that. First, let's dive into it with Callie, starting with what she sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
At home, I normally write at my writing desk in my study. And in front of me, there's a laptop raised up on a stand because, you know, bad back. Well, I haven't got a bad back, but I don't want one. And then behind that, there's a shelf. I listen to soundtracks, film soundtracks when I write. So I have sort of my favourite soundtracks there that I can see. Above the shelf, there is my framed Sunday Times bestseller lists cut out of the newspaper. So I've got 4 of those, and I have them there.
With room for more?
Yes. Yeah, well, I might have to get a bigger shelf, but it's nice to have that there to kind of, you know, see what I've accomplished. There's a little tiny statue of Shakespeare that I bought from a writing retreat in Stratford-upon-Avon. And then there's my award for Most Unreliable Narrator from Dead Good Book Awards. And then above on the wall, I've got lots of different photos. I love kind of seascape paintings. I've got one of my son swimming underwater naked, which he gets very embarrassed about when his friends come round. He's like, that's just some boy called Alex that my mum bought a photo of. And I'm like, no, it's because you can see his bum. So he gets very embarrassed. If I'm actually working on a book, then I might have other stuff stuck up. So like photos of what I think my characters might look like. Some people find this a bit weird, but when I come up with my characters' names, I will often go on Facebook, type in the name, and then see who comes up in the search results. I'll scroll through the search results until I see somebody who I think looks like them. There, I don't know if I should be admitting this. Then I'll go on their page, and if they've got lots of photos, I'll print out some photos and I'll stick them on my wall.
It's a bit catfishy.
Yeah, but I'm not actually pretending to be them or getting anything out of them. I'm just using images. A lot of authors use famous people, but I think I find that that doesn't work for me.
You need them personality-less.
They need, yes. So I just have the image and then I just transpose the personality onto the top.
And has that always been the case for you?
No. I think when I first started, because I started off writing rom-coms, and I used famous people, or not that famous, but, you know, they were actors and I had their photos up on the wall. I had like Bob Hoskins as, you know, Saint Peter. It was a supernatural rom-com. But I've stopped doing that because you sort of take on their traits that you're aware of. So this way, doing it with completely unknown people, then they can become your characters.
And you've said you've got the laptop stood up to help you back. What are you writing with on there?
I have a separate keyboard. I have a Bluetooth keyboard, which I crowdfunded. It's like a old typewriter. So the keys clack.
Right.
So it's proper tick, 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 like that when you type. And it's just lovely. It just makes typing more of a pleasure. You know, instead of just a normal Bluetooth, it's like typing on a typewriter.
So your readers have invested money in the way that the stories they read are written.
Yeah, I guess. I guess they helped. They helped pay for that.
That's quite an incredible idea.
Yeah.
Do you have any books around the walls?
Yeah, I've got loads of books everywhere. I don't actually have enough shelves, so everything is double stacked, piled up. I have all of the books that I've written. I've got the two rom-coms. I've got the 6 psych thrillers. I've got the 1 young adult book, all sort of in a display, so I can just see it at a glance. And then I've got all of the foreign editions, like sometimes more than one copy. They all like take up shelf after shelf after shelf.
We're kind of getting into your working day now.
Yeah.
But take me through yours, your writing day. The moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed on a day when you are getting your story down, how does it go for you?
Okay, so this will be the truthful version, because obviously there's the kind of made up version in my head how I would like to be, but that doesn't work. So I have a 7-year-old son. So typically my day starts at 7 o'clock when he comes and wakes me up, do the breakfast, do the school run. So I've dropped him off by about 9 o'clock. I've kind of left the school and I'm walking home. If it's on a Wednesday or a Friday, I'll have the dog with me. And so then I'll do a dog walk. The other days of the week, the dog goes to a dog walker who takes her to a field just to give me like longer to write, because walking the dog takes an hour out of the day. And basically I have between 9 and 3, because I have to pick my son up from school at 3:15. So my day is all constrained into that time. So I'll come back from the dog walk at maybe 10 o'clock. And then I can't just sit down and start writing then. I need to watch a bit of telly and unwind, because I'm a complete introvert and my partner and my son are extroverts, and they're very noisy extroverts. So, you know, after the morning routine and everything, even the dog's an extrovert. I just need to just chill for a bit. So I just watch something on telly that I've recorded, whatever, have about an hour, have my breakfast, late breakfast. And then I'm like, right, OK, 11 o'clock, ready to go. So at 11 o'clock, I will go to my desk. I'll answer any emails that there are, or any social media stuff. Although actually I do a bit of social media stuff while my son's getting ready for school. And then I'll pretty much write from 11 until 3. I'll normally quickly grab lunch and eat it at my desk. So I'll write in about a 3 or 4 hour window, and then I'll go and pick my son up. And then then I have to make him tea, then my partner comes home, and then do the bedtime routine. If I have a deadline, then I will do more work once my partner comes home, and I will sort of work then.
Are you completely parking the story in your head at that time? Are you one of these authors that can switch it off completely when you are dropping your son at school, when you're making dinner, when you're eating with your partner? Are you one of these authors that can stop the ideas coming?
No, it's hard, because actually naturally my ideal time to write is between about 2:30 and 8:00 at night. So at the moment, like my partner's had a little bit of a work break, so he's been doing all of the school runs and stuff, and I've been sort of settling down at 1 after lunch to work, and then he'll do the school run and everything, and he'll make the dinner, and I will literally work from 1 till dinner time, 6:30, and that's how my natural rhythm is to work. But if I'm interrupted, so I'll often be like, right, I'm into it, and then it'll be like 3:00, I've got to go. And so I'll be walking to the school to do the school run, and my head will be, you know, what happens next, what happens when? But then as soon as I see my son, then I go into mum mode, and writer mode just goes out the window. And then sort of writer mode, sort of I dip in and out depending on how quiet it is. I can't think about my book if people are asking me for, you know, glasses of water or what's for dinner, or, you know, even if the dog's being a bit hyper and wanting attention, it has to be in like a quiet time. So it'll probably be, you know, if they go to bed before, well, obviously my son goes to bed before me, but if my partner goes to bed before me, then I'll be watching a film, and then my mind will go back to the book, you know, or whatever.
So let me take you to those 4 solid hours of writing, yeah, you say per day, 11 till, yeah, 3. How do they work? How do you write in bursts? How are you organising your time? How many words are you getting done? Talk me through those 4 hours if you can.
I set myself word limits. So, for example, next year I need to write my next psych thriller, and it needs to be delivered in mid-June, beginning of June maybe. So my plan is January I will be plotting. So I'm going to have a big whiteboard, going to, you know, portion it off into 4 acts and make that into 8 scenes, and I'll, you know, plot it all out and everything. And once I'm ready with that and my, you know, some sort of pivotal scenes and chapters and characters and stuff, I will work out, okay, Monday to Friday, between beginning of February to beginning of June, average first draft, maybe 90,000 words, divide that by the number of days. And so I'll go, okay, I need to write, let's call it 1,500 words a day. So that is what motivates me. So when I sit down, I'm like, I need to write 1,500 words. So, and I will sit there until that is done. So whether that's done in bursts or, oh, I'm just going to check Twitter, you know, because I'm just, you're kind of having a thinking time, but you're sort of easily distracted. And then I'll go back to it. And I will try and hit that word count. If I miss a day because I've got to do some promotion or something, then I recalculate how many days I've got left and how many words that I need. So I've never missed a deadline yet. I'm quite organised like that.
Say it is 1,500 words. Is, yeah, it any 1,500 words? Is it your best 1,500 words?
It's somewhere in between, I think. I'm not... I think if you get too caught up in the right words, you will write at a snail's pace and you will never move forward. So I try and, you know, I can't completely switch off. Some writers can just completely switch off and just go dialogue, 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 and they miss out the description because, you know, it's faster to write that way, and then they put the description in later. I will write dialogue and description and, you know, everything that is needed in the scene, but later on in the process I'll come back to it again and I'll rewrite, you know, maybe during the line edit stage. I'll read through what I've got, I'll read it aloud, then I'll tweak the language and the prose. And so, yeah, I try and make it, you know, decent, but without, you know, spending hours. I think when you're writing a first draft, it's quite easy to be lazy. So you'll often use the same words a lot. So I might have quite a lot of glancing, he glances, she glances, you know, and actually you can look on it later and go, you don't need all that glancing. You can just have them just talking to that character, or, you know, just I use just quite a lot, and I have to go through and take out all of the justs and stuff. But you know, when I'm at first draft stage, I'm not thinking about my little peculiar ticks and stuff. I will sort that out later.
And is there any, aside from the film soundtracks that you like to write to, is there anything else that helps the ideas come out? Is there anything that you, any little intricacies maybe that help you on your working day? A particular type of coffee, something like that?
Well, I've kind of got into a bit of a habit of burning a candle. I've got these Neum energizing candles. And I don't know if it's just, you know, placebo effect.
So the burning, the smoke is meant to re-energise you.
It's a whole scent thing, like the aromatherapy thing. So I think it's got lemon in it or something. Okay. And actually that does help. I've got a friend, I did a psychology degree, who did his dissertation on smells and memory recall or something. I can't remember.
Well, I think they're right next to each other in the brain.
Yeah.
The parts. Yeah, I remember that.
So sometimes I burn this candle and it's, I don't know, maybe it sharpens my brain up a bit. I don't know. I also can't have cold feet, so I must always have slippers or, you know, I had some ski socks for a long time and I had no slippers and I would just wear my ski socks to make sure that my feet were warm. What else? Yeah, definitely the music. And if the music is not working, then I have to swap the music. I love the soundtrack to In Time. It's a sci-fi film.
Justin Timberlake.
With Justin Timberlake. And I don't write sci-fi, but there's something about the urgency in that film, because obviously they had like the clocks counting down and stuff, that when I'm writing, you know, writing a psych thriller, there are those scenes where it's like, you know, and you just need that kind of building you up. But then equally, recently I've been writing my second YA thriller, and there was a kind of romantic moment between two of the teens. And so I played something different, something with like a more mellow, but again, it was classical music, instrumental, can't have any lyrics, but it's the mood. The mood has to be right for the piece of writing. And if I'm going slowly, it's probably because the piece of music's not right.
And then do you use the piece of music to then change how you're writing? If you think, right, you know what, I'm getting nowhere near my 1500s, I need to speed this up.
Yeah, I have done that. If I thought, oh gosh, this is going a bit slowly, I've thought, right. And it's always In Time that I come back to. I try and have a different soundtrack for each book. So the one I'm writing now, the young adult thriller, it's I've been using Let Me In, the vampire film. And that's been great, but there were times when I was like, I need to ramp it up. So I go back to In Time and play that again. And I don't know, maybe it's just got like some sort of Pavlov dog response in my brain where it's like, this music makes you write fast.
Do you remember the first novel that you wrote that was published?
Yep, that was a romantic comedy called Heaven Can Wait.
Well, let's just, I don't want to spend too much more time on this, but how was your writing day working on that story? How much different was it to how you work today?
Yeah, it was different. The first four books that I wrote, I had a day job. So when I wrote Heaven Can Wait, which was published in 2009, so I've nearly been a published author for nearly 10 years now, I had a day job, I was single, I lived in a one-bedroom flat. So I would, you know, come home from work and work in the evenings, and I'd work in the weekends, you know, not go out, not see my friends, because I wanted to write this book. So it couldn't be more different now. And then I could, you know, use my night owl tendencies. And on the weekend, I might often start at like 8 o'clock at night and write till 3 or 4 in the morning. And I do that sometimes when I go to writing retreats. I'll have dinner and then I'll sort of write until the early hours. And I love the stillness. I love it when it gets dark. At the moment is my favourite time of year to write, because as soon as it gets dark in my study, like 4:30, I feel like I can concentrate better. You know, it's just, I don't know, I like it to be really dark.
Talk to me about that moment then, that tipping point. If you said for the first five or so novels you were working and writing, when you've, you know, when you've become successful enough to do this as a full-time day job, how was that suddenly 5 days a week, whatever you want? How did you at all formulate your schedule to kind of make that work? I wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah, well, So the first two rom-coms, I had a day job. And then when I was on maternity leave with my son is when I wrote The Accident, which was my first psych thriller. So yes, I wasn't at work, but you know, anybody who's had maternity leave knows it's actually harder than being at work. So I wrote that. And then when I returned from maternity leave, I started working 4 days a week in my job, and I'd look after my son on the fifth day and obviously the weekend and stuff. And I wrote The Lie. That year was the hardest year of my life to try and fit things in.
And you were contracted in to write The Lie? So you had to get it down?
Yeah, I had a two-book deal, so I had to write The Lie. And it was so hard, but I was lucky that because The Accident and The Lie sold so well, The Lie in particular did very, very well. It sold like 250,000 ebooks. So then I got offered a contract for 3 books, and I said to them, you know, or I said to my agent, I really need this to be enough money to give up the day job. Otherwise, I'm going to go insane. I can't balance motherhood and a day job and writing. I don't know if I can do this sort of thing. But fortunately, Avon gave me enough money. It wasn't as much as I earned as an office manager in London at a university, but it was enough that I could give up the day job. And it felt risky, you know. My partner said, oh, are you sure about this? What if they don't sell? And I was like, then I'll go back to work. So, yes. So then I had...
Supportive there.
Yes. Yeah, nice optimistic partner. So then I went from desperately trying to just fit it in writing when I could to dropping my son off at nursery and going, oh, you know, I had longer days then as well. He was at nursery Monday to Thursday, 8 till 5. So I had ages, and I'm sure I wasted loads of time then. But it was just... I've just felt like I could breathe, you know what I mean? And other stuff, housework and all that kind of stuff, I could actually get it done instead of just having the messiest house in the world. And it was great. But in some ways, when you have that tiny snatch of time, you know, after work, before you go to bed, you properly focus on that and you're not nearly so distracted. When you've got the whole day, you're like, oh, maybe I'll just go on Twitter for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour, an hour. You know, what was I doing on the internet? You have to. That's why I think that I do the word count thing, because without that, I don't have any kind of discipline to my day or any sort of. I need that kind of whip crack sort of in my head. So I, you know, because I thought I would spend my day at the cinema or going to the museum, refilling my creative well, you know, as they call it. I haven't done that once.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We'll get more with Callie in just a sec. First, let's get some of your writing tips on the show. Remember, if you've got a little bit of advice that you want to share, maybe something that's helped out your writing day, if you've got a trick that's let you get your words onto the page easier, I'd love to know what it is, then I can share it on this show. Tell me about it over on the contact page at writersroutine.com. This is from Tom. Tom in San Francisco. You know, very quickly, it will never cease to amaze me, Tom, that you're listening way over there. on the other side of the world, on the glorious golden beaches and the bays of San Francisco, whilst I am in London, where it actually hailed today, and I saw a lightning strike in April. So there we go. Slightly different places there, Tom. Anyway, he says, the joy of writing is that you can fit it around your day and the weather. Yeah, fitting what I was saying earlier. Tom says, if it's sunny, then get outside. If it's cold, lock yourself away in the warmth. Even go back to bed. Make the most of your surroundings. You've not got a regular job, and relish that. Cheers, Tom. Really good advice, but I think easier for you to make the most of the weather, as I say, when you're on the golden glistening beaches of California. Karen in Exeter says, a little bit closer to home, but still impressed that you're listening over in Devon, Karen. You say that you're a night owl, so when the world has gone to bed and everyone is silent, that's the best time to make the most of your ideas. And finally, Mel in Cardiff, cold showers, she says. Break up your writing day with one. Let the freeze spark your story. There's a big hype around cold showers at the moment. Have you seen this? It's the Wim Hof craze. I've heard it on the radio. It's been all over podcasts recently as well. It's all about how by training to breathe and having cold showers, you can kind of fix your immune system. Honestly, look up Wim Hof if you've not already. Incredible stories that this guy's got to tell. But I'm no expert, so you have to do the research yourself. Anyway, Mel, thank you so much. Yes, cold showers can be very revitalizing for your ideas. Probably make the most of that. Thanks for your tips, by the way. You can send yours over to me at writersroutine.com. And now let's get one on from a friend of the show who wants you to relax.
Hi, my name's Sarah Pimbra. My novel, Cross Her Heart, is out now. And my writing tip is, don't take it too seriously. If you get it wrong, no one's going to die. It's not brain surgery. Just write.
There you go. Thank you so much to Sarah Pinborough. You can catch up with all of the tips in her episode from last week. And you can send me your bit of writing advice right now over at writersroutine.com. Right, let's get back to the big chat of the episode with Callie Taylor then. In this part, we talk about plotting and how much she knows and what happens when what she thought she knows turns out to be wrong. Also, we find out more about that quite curious Most Unreliable Narrator award that she picked up and why she thinks she won it. After we start with her new novel, Sleep, and we find out about the spark of that very first idea.
I had put forward two ideas to my agent and my editor that they didn't like. That they thought, no, not sure. So then I actually said, okay, how about a book set in a sleep clinic? Now, this book is not actually set in a sleep clinic, but that was the spark of the idea. How interesting would it be if there were a bunch of people in a sleep clinic with different sleep issues? And I thought, right, great. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have them there in the present day, and in the past they'll have been at this hotel on a remote island, and something, you know, scary will have happened that has caused their sleep issues and whatever. And that's how it sort of initially sort of came to me, and my agent and my editor were like, yeah, brilliant, we love it. But then as I actually sat down to write the book, and I sat down to write the past history that happened in the hotel on the Isle of Rum, it was so rich. There was so much story in it that I just thought, I don't think I can match this in a present day thread. This is the story. What, you know, what happens on Rum is the story. And I kind of realized as I was writing it that a big part of it was to do with guilt and secrets. And, you know, the main character can't sleep because she was in a car accident and she was driving, and she feels responsible for the deaths of her colleagues who were also in the car. Then there's this mysterious person who leaves her notes telling her to sleep, you know, to die, to sleep, and all this sort of thing. And then she sort of leaves London, where that bit is set, and she goes to Rum. And then these guests turn up for a walking tour, and the messages start again. And she realises that whoever was plaguing her. And I wanted to write something a bit different. I still wanted it to be a psychological thriller. So there's still that feeling of, you know, is the main character sort of imagining this? Is this really happening? But also have that slight sort of Agatha Christie-esque, then there were none, bunch of people in an isolated location. One of them is a killer. And I really enjoyed writing that. And I think every book that I write, I try and push myself into kind of slightly different directions because it entertains me and I enjoy doing it.
So aside from going on Facebook and typing in your characters' yeah. names, what do you do next? How are you plotting? How are you planning?
I am a big fan of a book called Stealing Hollywood by Alexandra Sokolov. She's an author, and she has also worked in Hollywood as a screenwriter. And basically, it teaches you how to use the four-act structure, you know, which all films can be split into, really, or most films, to plot a novel. So you have four acts, which is eight sequences. So you split each act into two. And at the end of each sequence, there is some kind of climax. And the way that this works is it keeps the novel snappy because, you know, at least 8 points through the book, something really significant happens, something kind of gasp-worthy or, you know, a major twist that makes life hard for your main character. And obviously right in the middle, you've got your kind of midpoint twist or your game changer or whatever. So I use this and I will get a whiteboard and I'll, you know, draw a big rectangle on it, split it into eight. And then I'll think, right, okay, so what does my main character want? So in the case of Sleep, Anna wants to discover who is sending her these strange notes. And then I'll also think to myself, what does my main character need, which is different? So she needs to forgive herself for the car accident. And you chart the want, so trying to discover who is behind the sleep messages, but you also chart the need, and that is your character's emotional journey, so that they change over the course of the novel. And I just, yeah, I use a whiteboard, massive, huge one in my office, and I write these things down, and I don't always know what happens in between these different 8 points, but that's the fun. You know, when you sit down, and also the frustrating thing, you sit down and you go, oh, right, so that's happened. Now how am I going to get to that, you know, that next bit? And that's the way I work now. I've worked in different ways. I've tried pantsing a novel completely. That was the lie. That had to be written a lot before it was any good. I've tried outlining. I wrote a 13,000-word outline before I wrote The Escape, and that felt like I'd already written the book. You know, so many words. And I think I've reached a point now where I'm somewhere in between, where I've still got that freedom to explore and I don't know what's going to happen, but I have got roadmaps. So I'm not sort of floundering around looking for a plot. There is a plot there. I just need to fill in the gaps. At the moment, I'm writing my next young adult thriller. And I thought I knew what all the points were. I thought I knew who the antagonist was and what was going to happen. As I got closer and closer, I realised it was wrong. And I thought, now I have got to know the characters, that doesn't work anymore. That character wouldn't do that, or it just doesn't fit. So then I had to stop, and I was like, okay, I need a new ending. I need a new bad guy. How is this going to end? So I was talking to some author friends on Facebook, and I said, am I right? Is my gut instinct right? This doesn't work, does it? So I sort of gave them a sort of pricey of what it was, and they went, no, I think you could come up with a stronger ending. So I was like, great. And then they suggested things, and I was like, no. So never mind, don't worry, I'll think about it. And so I went to bed about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was just lying there, and then about sort of 45 minutes later I sat upright and I was like, oh, I've got it. So, you know, I didn't want to wake my partner up because he was asleep. So I just grabbed out, you know, a notebook and a pen that I keep, and in the sort of half light of a bit of, you know, light coming from outside, I just wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote. And then the next morning I woke up and I was like, please, please still work, please. And I read it through and I was like, oh, it still works, thank God. So, you know, it can happen like that. You maybe go down the wrong road and then you reverse back and then you wait, you know, to use that analogy, and then you don't know which way to turn. Then all of a sudden, you know which way to turn.
And you, speaking about the book Stealing Hollywood.
Yeah.
With your 8 points in your four acts.
Yeah.
Do you ever worry that that could become transparent to one of your fans, like a real avid reader who's read all of your work? Do you ever worry that they're thinking, oh, I know what's going to, you know, there's going to be a moment here, there's going to be a moment there?
No chance. I mean, they might expect a midpoint twist. And the last two books, so The Fear and Sleep, have had a twist right at the very end. And my other books didn't. So will I keep doing a twist right at the very end? I don't know. I know people like them, but that, you know, I don't want to be predictable. I want to write books that entertain me as much as, you know, as the reader, because they take so long to write, you know. And I don't want to be predictable at all. And in fact, that's part of the reason why why Sleep does have this slight Agatha Christie-esque thing, because it is different. You know, and people said, oh, it's quite different from her other books, but there's still that same sort of voice and suspense and grippingness and all of that kind of thing. And yeah, I don't think a reader could have predicted, even though I used exactly the same four-act structure, 8 sequences, it's a very different book and very unpredictable, because, you know, people have said, oh, you know, I didn't think it was this person, or oh, I thought it was that person, but I didn't know why, you know, and I couldn't. Because you can use this structure with sci-fi, with horror, with rom-coms, with anything. Yes, I think you can watch, you know, and Alexandra says it in the book, you can almost time some films. You get to this point in the film and then boom, there's your cute meat, or boom, there's your reversal, you know, whatever it is. But I think in books, because you have so much more to play with, you can have different timelines, you can have three characters' point of views, so it's not as predictable because the structure is different and it's woven together in a different way.
So in Sleep, when you've got this Agatha Christie thing where you've got a load of characters in one place, they're trapped there.
Yeah.
And as a plotter, you seem to be a lot more structured than a lot of authors that I've chatted to. Is it the same with your characters? How much do you need to know about each character before you start writing?
I need to know a fair amount. But it is in the writing that you really get to know them. So, like I said, for my main character, I'll know what she wants and what she needs. I'll know what her greatest fear is, and I'll know what her flaw is that is going to make it harder for her to achieve what she wants. So I'll definitely know that about her. And then the antagonist will have the opposite. So that's the best way to have conflict. If your antagonist's want or goal is the direct opposite, so, you know, your main character wants to escape with her life. The antagonist wants her to stay there and die. You know, that's at a very basic level. And then I will work backwards for both of them, for the main character and the antagonist. So I'll think, why are they the way that they are? What happened in the past? Why have they got this flaw or this fear or this want or, you know, whatever? And I'll go back, you know, maybe even into childhood and think, you know, what were their parents like? What was their upbringing like? Did they have siblings? And I'll look for the thing that made them the person that they are, because there's always something. And, you know, it's the same as regular people. Somebody will have something about them, a flaw that has come from something that's happened in the past. So that's where I'll start with those two characters, because those are the most important if I have an obvious antagonist. And then the other characters, less so, but I'm not the sort of person to do a questionnaire and ask favourite colours and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, which I think is absolutely redundant. And I think you get to know the characters as you write them. So often, like the book that I'm writing now, I'm going to have to go back to the beginning and tweak the first few chapters, because I've got to know the main character now, and some of the things she's saying at the beginning are not her anymore, because that was just me getting to know her. So it's a combination of preparing and then writing it and get to know them.
Right at the start, when you were talking about your working space, you mentioned you've got your award there.
Yeah.
Most unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
I'm very excited that that's an award, you know. it's very hard to talk about this because the point of an unreliable narrator is that is the twist.
Yeah.
Tell me about the moment in the writing of that story that you realised that your narrator was going to be unreliable, and then how did you tease that and make it so shocking? What won you the award of the best unreliable narrator?
Yeah, well, I've got to say, the Dead Good Reader Awards have the best titles. They change it every year, so there's always different awards, you know, best cozy town mystery or best, you know, shock ending or whatever it is. So there's always different awards every year, and that year, one of them was unreliable narrator. So my very nice readers, it's reader nominated. So my readers nominated me for it. They also nominated The Escape for most recommended read, but it didn't win that one, but it won unreliable narrator. I think the thing is, you know, the main character in The Escape has agoraphobia. And I think as a result, because the sort of backstory with her is that she had previously lost a pregnancy quite late on in the pregnancy. So when she had her daughter, she was uber protective over her because, you know, she had suffered a loss once. And, yeah, just trying to work out how much to say. So I think part of the unreliableness is she overreacting to the things that are happening to her that make her decide to go on the run with her daughter, or is there a genuine threat there? And I think that is what makes her unreliable.
Was it a surprise to you that she was unreliable, or was that the deal the whole way through?
Well, she's not the only unreliable person in the book. So yeah, it's all a book of smoke and mirrors, really. And I can't say too much, but not everybody in the book is what they seem. And yes, you know that at the beginning, because, you know, your reveal at the end will be, this is what has been going on. And so you just have to just work that in, and often in the second draft or the edit. The first one you just go through, and then after you come back and you just tweak things, and it's hard to explain. It's, you know, it depends on the book and the story and the characters, but yeah, you'll know that in your head at the beginning, that these characters will be unreliable, and I don't want the reader to know who to believe.
So that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Callie for coming on the show. You can find out loads more about her new novel, Sleep, over on our website. It's writersroutine.com. Whilst you're there, send us your writing tip, please. A tip that lets you get through the day. Now, I'm having a break next week, so the next episode should be with you around the 19th of April. I've got loads of incredible guests on the way to get you through from then on, though. Jeffrey Deaver will be here. Australian sensation Trent Dalton will be on as well. And we've even got Val McDermid sharing her writer's routine. It's a lot of fun. You'll want to hear it. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast so it automatically downloads into your feed. You can do that through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows from. And make sure you keep across us on socials. On Twitter, we are at WritersPod. Instagram, Writer's Routine as well, so you know exactly what is happening and when. And I'll see you soon, next time, on Writer's Routine. Bye!
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.